What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL Live. Joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, Toby D. and Jonathan Holder. Today, we are joined by a very special guest, Aaron Freeman from the Locked On Falcons podcast. Aaron, how are you doing today, sir?
I am doing well. Glad to be on talking Falcons football with you guys, especially after a win.
Yes, especially after a win. Jonathan, what's up, brother? How you doing this morning? Listen to me. Good Lord.
It's great. You know, got through the workday and just excited to get in here and chat it up with you guys in the chat. And gorgeous win.
That's right. Toby D, I'm going to need you to unmute yourself so that you can tell everybody what's up and how are you doing.
Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Yeah, okay. South Carolina always try to give us hell every year. We always manage to find a way to win. So go Dogs.
There you go. Go Dogs. Go Dogs. Yes, we got a lot of good fun football to talk about today. And like I said, we're joined by a special guest. So I guess without further ado, we might as well just go ahead and get on into it. Jonathan, I hope you are ready with the sounder because Fred Butts done tipped us $5 already.
Fred Butts.
We appreciate you greatly.
Appreciate it, Fred.
He says, Ritter proved Sunday he's a franchise QB. He refused to lose. He's the real deal, and Arthur Smith has finally turned him loose. 3-0 incoming. I love Fred's optimism. He has been a champion of Ritters from Jump Street. So this is no surprise on the comment. We'll see on the franchise QB, but hey, I'll take 2-0 and having to fix things than 0-2, wondering like the, you know, some of the other deals like Minnesota and even the Bengals at this junction. Like, you know, you got a good team. They're just trying to figure it out, right? So I would much rather have 2-0 still trying to adjust and figure it out than the other way around. Let's see. Let's get on into it. Aaron, I'm going to throw you on the spot right off the rip. What is your 30,000-foot view of the 2-0 Falcons? Did you see that coming, so to speak?
Well, in my official preseason predictions, I had them 1-1 at this point, but it wasn't as if it was like some crazy idea that they could win both of these games. I figured pretty much every game this year is going to be a close game that comes down to like the last 5 minutes of the game. And that's been kind of the case in both these first two games. And I think that will continue to be the case for, you know, the next couple of games as well. So I think what's been impressive about the Falcons is how well they have finished in both of those games, that they have really been kind of the dominant team in the fourth quarter. They have not looked as dominant in the first three quarters. And, you know, that's, going back to what you said, JR, is like, that's the thing we gotta figure out. Like, how can we Falcons in the first three quarters? Like,
get started faster.
Yeah. So I like the 2-0 start. I think there's still things that the Falcons can improve upon. And I think they'll have two tough matchups coming up, and we'll kind of see where this team is at. It's not the, you know, I think the Panthers and Packers were solid competition. But I think most people went into the season looking at teams like the Lions and Jaguars as heavy favorites to be playoff contenders. And I'm sure amongst this circle, we thought the Falcons would be a playoff team as well. But, you know, I don't think outside the state of Georgia, there was that many people that were necessarily banging the table as the Falcons. And so I think these next two games will be a very good litmus test to kind of see how the Falcons measure up with teams that I think were nationally or universally considered to be among the better teams in the league.
Yeah, I agree with that as far as the, you know, like you said, a litmus test, a standard. You know, Detroit was the offseason darling of pretty much every outlet as far as to make that next step. And, you know, they just lost at home, I think, in overtime to the Seahawks. So that's a tough game. So now, like, they are banged up, which we'll get into here a little bit later on when we start previewing the Lions game itself. But, you know, how do they respond, right? How do they respond to adversity? Are they going to be, you know, hungry and seeing a – which I will say this, a lot of people, you know, when I make the comments on Twitter, people like sometimes look at me sideways and maybe I don't, you know, clarify myself as well, but I see the Lions and the Falcons being really similar teams, similarly, you know, like very similarly constructed teams, teams that want to, you know, run the ball first and play hard-nosed defense. And, you know, they have a similar style of mentality, and which makes me, you know, chuckle, because you have one team here who that's getting all the national praise, and then a team that is, like I said, very similar in structure getting like overlooked in a sense. And that's fine. It's whatever, you know, but I'll be interested to see how they stack up with each other. Toby, what was your, you led in with Go Dogs, which, you know, caught me off guard a little bit there, but, which is great. That's fine. What was your, like, you know, 30,000 foot view on a 2-0 start? I mean, I know you've been all off season, you know, Falcons to the Super Bowl, channeling your inner Mike from out of your Falcon mind. What was your thoughts on the 2-0 start?
Let me say this first. I'm loving the crap talking that the Falcons are doing. This is definitely not the same Falcons team. They are definitely taking on the identity of Arthur Smith. They are talking crap. I mean, you got the clip where Grady Jarrett is calling Jordan Love a dumb A-boy. I never heard that even come out Grady Jarrett's mouth before. And then you had Desmond Ridder in practice against the Miami Dolphins talking about one of the cornerbacks is too effing short. I'm loving it. I'm just going to say that off the rip. Because, man, that type of Falcons team is what we need on the field, not the type of cutesy, goody-two-shoe Falcons that we've always had and used to seeing that can't finish games. Like Aaron Freeman said, these guys are learning how to close games now. And when it's the game on the line, they are aggressive and they're going after it. They don't care. And I'm loving that part of it. And those two things are the two that have stood out to me the most, the crap talking that they're doing right now and finishing and closing these games. So that's what I'm looking at from 30,000 feet right now.
So you're trying to tell me that you think that the Falcon filter is off is what you're.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. Yeah, it's gone.
No more choir boys, so to speak.
No.
As long as they can keep it on the field with their attitude and their disposition versus, you know, doing crazy stuff off the field.
Yeah, true.
So, Jonathan, let's get your high level opinion, and then we'll start drilling down into this thing.
I really like.
You don't say.
I like the fact that, like, we've already talked about it, where you know, they're able to close these games out. I don't know how many years we've watched them where they come out strong. We saw it last year, early on. Now, what I will say is, we saw this as that season went on last year. We did see more and more of what we're seeing this year. We just couldn't quite get over the hump, right? Mm-hmm. Last year, we would kind of start slow, get going, and then, like, the defense would pick it up in the second half. The offense would pick it up a little bit in the second half, and it gave you just that little smidge of hope. But more often than not, we just couldn't quite get there, you know?
Couldn't finish the job, so to speak. Yep,
couldn't quite finish the job. But what we talked about all offseason was – you know, when you raise the floor of talent, then when you get into these kind of situations, that extra talent that you have now, that surplus of talent that you have now, is able to help you to get over that hump. And I think that's just what we're seeing here. It's also, you know, with Ridder, you're seeing essentially what he did throughout his entire college career. He was never a fast starter. He was always a guy that would start out a little slow, whether we're talking his entire time at Cincinnati. Or if we're taking it on a game by game basis, like as he went along in his career there, he got better and better. But like generally from a game to game standpoint, he generally would start a little slow, kind of get into the feel of the game. And then once he did, he would settle down and that's when he would make his hay. Right. And I think that's what we're seeing here, both from Ridder, but also from, you know, like you said, the identity of the coach. I think the coach is really good about, you know, he comes in with a plan. If it works, great. If it doesn't, I think he maybe not as quickly as we would all want him to, maybe, but I think he, by the end of the game, he's figured out what is going on. Yeah. Like what adjustments need to be made and what things we're, you know, are good against their weaknesses versus things that we don't want to do against their strengths. I think we see that a lot where as we get later in the game, the play calling gets better. They're more efficient and things like that. And it's just things seem to work a little bit better as we go along through the game. So
cool.
Seeing that happen is super exciting to see it happen on a consistent basis.
Right. All right. So now on to, let's get into the everybody's favorite segment. Yay. We really should get like some theme music. Yeah. We have to get Toby to put us together a beat or something like that so that we can play while we're doing this. I was trying to see, I saw Willie Doc in here earlier. Normally I try to wait to see him post a comment because he likes to take guesses on who the baller and faller is going to be. So I'll give him a second, but yeah, he may not be in here yet. Anyway. All right. So there it is. There it is. I see. I knew he was going to get to it. All right. Appreciate that, Willie.
There you go. Look at that. Oh. He's Willie
Doc. Appreciate it, Willie.
Willie said, what's up, Sirius? And pound for pound. He says, baller, the entire team of the fourth quarter performance. Faller, the DB play, honorable mention, Arthur Smith. Side eye glance, also smart Arthur Smith. You know, honor mention and the side eye. Okay.
At the same time.
That's right. Okay. All right. All right. So let me get rid of this banner. I don't remember, yeah, these banners sometimes cover up folks' faces. There we go. Okay. So, our baller for this week, we have two players and an honorable mention. Our two players are Bijan Robinson and Mac Hollins. Bijan, obviously, for his best performance on the ground as a Falcon, almost every run looked like a daggum highlight play, which was impressive to say the least. Now, Aaron, you were early on in the process, pounding the drum, I think maybe at the beginning sarcastically for Bijan, and then as we got closer, it definitely became not sarcastically for Bijan. Now I could be reading that wrong, but what was your thoughts on his game?
I was dead serious from the jump.
From the jump.
Yeah, I mean, Bijan looks like Bijan.
That's right.
Like that was the thing last year. Where when I started talking about that in like late December, where it was like, it just, you know, and we've seen it kind of come to fruition, and it was just like, he just feels exactly like what this team wants in a draft pick. And, you know, if the board doesn't fall a certain way where, you know, maybe quote unquote bigger need is there, you know, then it makes total sense for them to pull the trigger on Bijan. And that is what kind of happened in the draft. And, you know, I've been jokingly saying for months now that there's like two types of people in the world. There's Bijan fans and people that haven't watched them yet. And, you know, 6 months ago, it was a lot of people that hadn't watched them yet. But like slowly as we got towards the draft, like I just kept hearing from more and more Falcon fans being like, at first, I thought the whole Bijan to Atlanta thing was crazy. But then I watched him and then I was like, I kind of want him here. And then I feel like even the people that were skeptical after the draft and being like, oh, we should have drafted Jalen Carter or this guy or somebody else. And I just feel like the more and more people see him, they're like, you know what? Hey, he can play. And
that's, I think
that's been fully on display these first two games. And I think against Green Bay, he was absolutely, I mean, I think he was the main reason why the Falcons were even in a position going into the fourth quarter to be, you know, only down two scores. Cause it just seemed like if he wasn't getting the ball, the offense really wasn't working until that fourth quarter. And so he kind of just did the thing that he did at Texas. And I think we'll see him do quite a bit here in Atlanta, which is just kind of put the team on his back and be the offense until they figure out what the other stuff that they have to figure out. And I think that's just a testament to how good he is as a football player. So it doesn't feel like anybody out there is still, you know, anti-Bijan. And if they are, then they're just sort of, you know, it's gone dark in terms
I'll say this, like, you know, some of the love we're starting to see come out for the Falcons. Like if the Falcons were, the Falcons could still be 2-0, you know, if they had picked, I don't know, if they had picked Jalen Carter,
right,
or if they had picked some other guy or whatever. But for one, I don't think Jalen Carter would be as good here as he is in Philadelphia. I think just
the situation. Makeup of that, we've said that many times.
Of that whole situation is a far better fit for him. But even if we did, what he does most of the time is not super flashy. Okay. Most of the time. All right. Having Bijan be as good as he is, but also as flashy as he is. Now, it's not that he's trying to be, it's just that's how he plays. But him being as flashy as he is, that draws eyes to the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get guys like the Pat McAfee's of the world. And you get guys like, you know, like former GM here.
Pioli.
Pioli, yeah. Yeah. You know, and then Schrader and Schrager and those guys. But there's a lot more people now that after the 2-0 start, and also with the performance of Bijan, like you add that on top of it, and now there's a lot more eyes coming to us because of him.
Oh yeah. So yeah, exactly. Like and his performance of 140 something yards on the ground. Oh, no, 100.
It was 172 all-purpose yards. How about that?
172
all-purpose. Yeah, it was 124 on the ground and 48 in the air. I was mixing up the 48 part. Anyway, yeah, like he showed you that he is the offensive weapon that they want him to be, and they're optimizing it or not, but like focusing that at least in that game, and it worked to perfection. Now, Toby. I agreed with the pick, but you're the one that threw out the name Mac Hollins. So what about Mac had him in the baller category for you?
I mean, the Tony Gonzalez rendition back in the end zone catch alone got me caught on.
Got you hired.
That was a touchdown. I mean, that was a touchdown,
was a touchdown, but it's all good. They'll get it next time. I mean, we've seen Matt Ryan and Tony Gonzalez connect on them back of the end zone tiptoe touchdowns all the time, right? And to see Mac Hollins actually – pull that off, and it should have been a touchdown, but it's cool. But this guy, the last 2 weeks, guys, has made some crucial catches for the Atlanta Falcons, and he's showing he got hands. And that was something – I didn't watch Mac Hollins a lot over there with the Raiders, but I'm seeing up close and watching the hands that he has. They are soft as butter, and he's catching whatever. I mean, the long, deep throw, which now we're looking like we have some money plays that the Falcons are using because – if y'all remember, last week, that same type of throw was thrown to Kyle Pitts, except Kyle had two guys on him, and he was still able to catch that same similar fade route that Mac Hollins caught. And so we're starting to see a few money plays show up for the Atlanta Falcons in these games. So I can't wait to go back and watch both of those throws because I'm looking forward to seeing what those running them route concepts are that they've been using so far. So I can't wait after the third game to see what's up with that. But that's why I wanted Mac Hollins in that regard alone.
He's like, and I've said it a handful of times, and I'm still continuing to say it, like, he's bringing that Sanu vibes, sure-handed, chain mover, type receiver, and I like the swagger that he's being, that he's bringing. I think it was Monday he had the tweet that went out, the whole, like, everybody wants to be a savage until you're faced with a savage. And I'm sitting there going like, I appreciate the sentiment, Mac. I mean, but I don't know if three catches for 60 yards is like savage material, but I like the energy and the swag and the vibe that he's bringing. So for this week, he definitely earned, a baller spot to me. Aaron, you got any thoughts on Mr. Mac Hollins?
Yeah. I think you described it well with, sort of comparing him to Sanu, sort of being that guy that can not only help move the chains on third downs, but something that we didn't see consistently with Sanu on the receiving end here in Atlanta was the explosive plays down the field. It was more Sanu throwing the ball on those explosive plays, than catching them. And so it was great to see Arthur Smith dial up a flea flicker on a third down of all times
a double reverse type. Yeah. That was pretty slick.
And, Ritter heaved it up there. And initially I was like, oh, he underthrew him. And if he had hit him right. But like watching, going back and seeing, it traveled about 55 yards in the air, 54, I think Next Gen Stats had it at exactly. And it's like, that's probably about the max range of Desmond Ritter's arm, he's no Joe Milton or Josh Allen heaving up 70 yard bombs and whatnot with ease. But I think that was about as good a play as you can have. And that really, I think, helped spark the offense going into the fourth quarter. So Mac Hollins definitely, I think, is deserving of being a baller.
No doubt. No doubt.
What's interesting is I saw a tweet out there that was like that exact same formation. And like they ran it exactly the same. That play happened last year, but it wasn't a flea. It wasn't a flea flicker. It was like an inside run. So like the guy that got the ball first kept the ball and just ran it, you know, behind some blockers. But like right. everything else from the quarterback dropping back to the runner, the initial runner getting it to Drake London coming back around on the reverse side, like it looked exactly the same. They just did a different thing in it.
Right.
So now there's two times that play is on tape and there's two completely separate results out of that exact, I mean, running it exactly the same. And that's really cool that they were able to get that kind of thing out there so that, you know, you can't say, oh, this is what they're doing when they run this. You don't know exactly what they're going to do.
No doubt, no doubt. All right. So now on to everybody else's favorite part, the faller section of the ballers and fallers. And it is Trey Flowers. He got that first game. You're like, okay, cool. All right. You know, Trey Flowers might be able to hold it down until Jeff Okuda comes back. Maybe we'll be okay there. And this game, yeah, it looked a little rough for him. I haven't had a chance to actually see, you know, what his PFF score is. Not that we put a ton of, you know, stock behind it, but it like we state, it is a metric to be used. But, yeah, he kind of had a rough game to where he even got, like, pulled out there, what, towards the end of the fourth quarter, right, if I'm not mistaken?
It was the end of the third.
Yeah, he took him out.
But the deal is, though, when I was looking at the snap count of Trey Flowers, unless the snap counts are all jacked up, it really only had him only missing like one or two snaps.
Yeah, I think it was only one snap.
Yeah, that's what I was.
They scored. I think they scored on the play. That was the one of the Jaden Reed touchdowns. I think it was.
Right.
I think it was their last touchdown that got him to 24.
Yeah. But either way, I agree with L. Mayers here. It says Flowers got picked on all game. Yeah, they isolated Flowers and really, you know, outside of Terrell's like PI early on in the game, which that was just one of those instances where, you know, you were going to do that, or you were going to do that and not give up a touchdown. So,
yeah,
but it does seem like that Okuda is really on pace to come back, you know, possibly this game, which we'll touch on a little bit later. But we might have seen the last of Flowers as the primary backup. I wonder if they'll, you know, give either Mike Hughes or Clark Phillips a shot there, or if they just call it a bad game and stick with Flowers, because I think on the depth chart he still has him listed as the backup to Okuda.
Yeah, and well, I think when he came out, Mike Hughes came in and took over the spot, and I think Trey Flowers mostly played like the nickel or dime guy after that, because he was in on the last play, the Packers. He was the guy they went after again. Right. You know, luckily the guy didn't catch it, but. He was definitely in there, but he wasn't the number two guy.
My honorary mention on the fallers is the, at least like the lack of pass rush. Like there were times where like too often that Jordan Love had, you know, he seemed very comfortable back there, and that could hurt us later on in the year if we can't get that ramped up. So, does anybody else have any honorable followers they want to throw in there?
Now I'll go back to the pass rush. You can tell these guys still aren't in sync as far as chemistry wise yet. They're still rushing from a single man standpoint. So until they can kind of get that together, as far as the getting more comfortable with the schemes that they're running, because Onyemata really and Caden Ellis did his thing like he normally would do in the Saints defense, getting that sack or whatnot. They you can tell they're still trying to get a feel for the rushing and getting that thing together, because they got pieces. So I'm going to give it some time. I'm not too concerned about it just yet. I'm going to give it about week five. I think they'll start, you know, getting more chemistry together and being able to rush the the quarterback a little bit better in sync.
Gotcha.
Than what they're doing right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, part of me has to like continue to tell myself, look, we're only on week two. Like the things that you're worried about, give it a little bit of time. The things that you're happy about, don't get too over your skis because we're still only in week two. All right, well, he's going to put up the question again in a different format, so I was just about to get to it. But Tony Wright asked us a question. He says, Toby, JR, Jonathan, and Aaron. You could just say you guys. The panel. Hey, y'all. Anyway, he says, your thoughts on second-round draft pick Bergeron play, which in my humble opinion has been outstanding as he is an electric steel sledgehammer. Now, Aaron, I know you spend a good bit of time in the offseason looking and studying like O-line play. I think Bergeron had a good game week one and got matched up against Kenny Clark in week two. So what have been your early thoughts on Bergeron?
Yeah, I thought he struggled a little bit week two. I would say when you look at, I think the offensive line overall, even though they only gave up one sack in week two, I think they struggled a lot more against Green Bay's front. They gave up a lot more pressure. And I think some of it, the fact that it didn't result in sacks is, I think, owed more to Desmond Ridder and his mobility more mm-hmm. so than, any improvement on the offensive line. So Bergeron took a step back, right? I think that's fair to say. And I think it's mostly because Kenny Clark is really good and he was just kind of bullying him. And there's a couple of plays where Devontae Wyatt got the better of him. I'm sure Toby has mixed feelings about that one, but
go dogs. Yeah.
But I said this on Locked On Falcons. That's probably airing as we speak or wrapping up as we speak, but basically like, one of the hallmarks of young players is inconsistency.
Right.
And I think you saw the ups of Matthew Bergeron in week one, you saw the downs of him in week two. And I think we'll kind of see that throughout the season where against, Derek Brown in week one, he was fine. Week two against Kenny Clark, he was not fine. And I think there'll be other games where he'll play really well against quality D tackles. And I think there'll be other games where he struggles against quality D tackles. And I'm sure there'll be games where, lesser D tackles get the better of him and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I think you just kind of have to just be patient. And as he kind of refines his skill set and his technique playing a brand new position. I think he'll be fine, but I do think I wouldn't say burn the tape, but like it was a rough day on Sunday.
Yeah. It was a rough outing when they got, the line moving on, laterally, you got to see, more of the athleticism, when he was able to get up to the second level. But yeah, just like holding a ground against, Kenny Clark or Wyatt was just more than he could do right at this moment. I would suspect that it would continue to, get better. Hopefully, if nothing else, we can cut the middle ground and just like get consistent, for a good stretch of the year. But
that's why they were, that's why we saw Hennessy. I think they wanted to go because Bergeron was coming in as a rookie, new position. I think that's why we saw Hennessy. I think Hennessy would have probably give you maybe not high a highs as maybe what Bergeron can give you, but he probably would give you a little bit more consistency. You would know what to expect. You got the rookie, and mm-hmm. so you take the lumps. You're going to have some rough patches, just like Ridder was a roller coaster yesterday or on Sunday. I mean, he had some really throughout the game he had some really good throws, but he didn't show any kind of real consistency until later in the game. I expect Bergeron like exactly what Aaron said, like. Some games he's going to go in, you're like, I don't know about this one. And you're going to get out after the game, you're going to be like, man, he did awesome. and then you may even the very next week, you may go up against guys who like the D tackles are like nobodies that you would think he would have a problem with. And then he gets, busted up pretty good that game. That kind of stuff will happen. So
I think a lot of times when we're staring across the aisle at our opponent. We look for name recognition, especially when it's a, you know, team that you may not study. You know, I know a lot of us don't have time to like study the entire league. So there, like you said, there may be times where like, oh, this shouldn't have an issue. And then, you know, somebody gets worked the entire game. But moving on into our next topic, something that we haven't had a chance to talk about a ton, not since the early days of MR2, but we had a fourth quarter comeback, gentlemen. We entered the fourth quarter down by 12, not down by like three, not down by 12. That's normally I think I would say I feel pretty confident saying that this is a game that we probably would have lost the last 2 years. I feel, you know, pretty confident making that statement. And the fact that you were able to, you know, we were able to turn it on both offensively and defensively and had another team pull a Falcon and choke. Like, that's a joke for a reason, right? You know, because normally it's us the other way around. Toby, how are you feeling when we entered that fourth quarter down by 12?
I was very impressed with Desmond Ridder's poise, which is not much of a shock because I kind of knew if it's one thing he has, it's leadership above everything else. And that leadership showed. I mean, you heard Bashawn Robinson talking about how he was not panicking. He had everybody hyped up and everybody was calm because they were feeding off his energy and you felt that. So that's the part that I was excited about to see that shine through on not only the offense and the defense as well. But one of the things that you're seeing, fellas, is that the aggressiveness now. They're not being conservative when they know that the game is on the line and they need to win it. I mean, you see Arthur Smith make that fourth and one gutsy call, but he did that last year with Mariota and they didn't get it. Mariota botched the snap and they couldn't convert it. But this year you saw a calm Desmond Ridder and Bashawn Robinson, my heart was pumping out of my chest. I don't know about y'all, but when they was that first initial call on that fourth and one, but when he gave it to Bashawn, you just now starting to feel like he'll get that when it's a fourth and one. And it doesn't matter if it's four or five guys on that same side, he's going to get it. And so that's starting to give me confidence now.
Yep. Aaron, what were you thinking, like rolling into the fourth quarter down by 12? Were you turning the TV off and heading to go get some dinner or something?
No, I wasn't at that point. I was confident in defense, right? Because I felt like the Falcons spent all that money on their defense this offseason, and that was kind of the thing where it was like I felt pretty good about where the defense would be at, and we'll get some stops, and we'll be able to give the offense chances to get back in this. It was the offense I was skeptical of. And it not because they didn't have the capability of it. It was just like watching those first three quarters. You're just like, are they going to get it going? Right. Mm-hmm. And so they did. And it didn't. I think Toby nailed it with Ridder and the poise and the lack of panic and, you know, Ridder being a gamer, all the phrases, the cliches, all you want to throw out there.
Right.
Right. But like it proved true. And, and the team, when they became focused on, we got to go out there and put our best foot forward to win this football game, they did that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so going back to something we talked about earlier, like we saw this team last year come from behind in games, right? They did it against the Rams. They did it against the Bucks early in the season. Yeah. But as you guys said, like they didn't have it enough to get over the hump. They didn't have the pieces on the defense. They didn't have enough weapons on the offense. And necessarily the great quarterback play to get over the hump. And I think that's the core difference with this team. And so, you know, I don't know if every week they're going to be able to pull off a 12 point comeback, but I know for the rest of the season, I'm not going to have any doubts of that. They can't do it, you know,
right.
They have the capability. And so every single Sunday it's like, oh, they're down 10 points. All right. Fine.
Okay. Right.
It's possible.
Yeah.
We talk about like mindset shifts, right? You're talking about like, you know, watching the poise and Aaron, you were talking about, you know, not necessarily sweating because of the defense. It's so funny how you know, adding a few, a little bit more talent, you know, on across the board gives you, you know, a different perspective, even if we are still not 100% sold on the QB. But even when they were, you know, down there in the goal line in the first part of the first half of the game, and they end up not getting it in, but when they hand the ball off to Bijan, I was like, okay, it's going to be a touchdown. And this is only his second game, you know, and it's just, it's so funny the expectations that start to mount as you add talent and as you do start, you know, do start winning. It's a good problem to have, right? Or, you know, good, you know, thought processes. But yeah, it's interesting to see the mindset shift. Like you have people. I love our fan base because it's going on in the chat as I'm sitting here, as we're sitting here talking. Like you have people like arguing, you know, whether Ritter is the guy or not. Or and I remember, you know, people arguing last year whether Mariota was the guy or not. And I love our fan base. We'll latch on. Like we want it so bad, right? We're not willing to just say, hey, we'll wait and see, you know, because this is only start number. Six, you know, for Ritter. So,
and he's 4-2.
Yeah. He's 4-2 and still hasn't lost at home. He's finally thrown a pick, so we can set that aside.
remarkably, like the one pick he threw wasn't his fault.
Yeah. And the other two, holy crap. Like if you want to sit here talk about, like, what do you, like, you know, the hiccups of only being your sixth start, I mean, those two that they dropped. He's got a like rabbit's foot in his butt or something, because he's thrown about four or five passes now that should have been picks that weren't.
Well, but that's, you know, from even the good quarterbacks, you're going to get one, maybe not a game, like for the really good ones, but
Josh Allen. Josh Allen, he'll get three a game.
Yeah. That might Josh be picked off. Yeah, Josh Allen will put three out there and be like,
look, please, that man's got an arm.
I'm trying to give it to you.
He's got an arm and a confidence that says I can make every throw anywhere on the field, and I'm gonna do it.
Yeah.
He's the modern day Brett Favre.
Yep, very much so. Like he's like, yep, I'm just gonna do it.
I mean, let's put it like this, guys. I mean, it's something about Green Bay in their hands. They can't catch an interception to save their lives when it comes to the Falcons. Look, if we go to 2016 or when we got to the championship game, right, you can count how many times that Matt Ryan should have been picked in that game and how different that game could have been had they caught at least two of those three interceptions or however many interceptions that Matt should have thrown that hit their hand, literally, right? It could have changed their whole game. But it didn't, because it's Green Bay, and I guess they just can't catch the Atlanta Falcons quarterback balls when they throw it in the second. So maybe that's what it is. And so, we should count that as a blessing.
Hey, we'll say maybe it's them paying us back for the Brett Favre thing.
Maybe that's what it is.
So, we'll take it. We'll take it. I ain't gonna complain about it.
When we were sitting there getting ready to head into the fourth, because I remember we're sitting at halftime, and I told my wife, because she was sitting there with me, and she was like, you know, saw that I was like not happy, especially the almost pick that hit Jaire Alexander. That was a pick six, right? Easily a pick six.
Yeah.
And he throws that ball. I literally was like, "What are you doing?" Like out loud, like just like I expected an answer coming back from the TV screen. And, but I told her, I was like, this is Ritter. This is who he has been his whole time playing NFL, which is, or playing football, is slow start, gets comfy, ramps up at the end. Like that's what he's been. So I'm hoping we'll see that today. Once we got closer to the fourth quarter and we were down by two and we got down by two scores, I was kind of like in my brain, I kept hearing, you know, seeing all this talk about like, and also just our thoughts, like this is the way this offense is designed. It is designed to be a front running offense. Doesn't mean we can't, obviously we did come back, but we would prefer to be in front. And then
you're not trying to live there.
Yeah. And so I was not extremely hopeful for the for the comeback, but I was so no holding out. I was holding a smidge of hope. I was like, maybe it could happen, and it would be awesome if it did. But I wasn't like, you know, we got this, man. We got, you know, I was definitely not like that. But when it started to happen and the defense started to play, you know, getting those three and outs, and you know, I started getting even more hopeful and started feeling it, started feeling the momentum. I felt like I was like, you know, fan of the stadium doing the we ready chant. I was getting jazzed for it. And so when we got to the end of the game, I was just like, we did it. Like, this is for us, for the Falcons, for, you know, the last handful of years. This is not something that we've done consistent basis at all. And so when it happened, I was just like, I don't care if somebody wants to be like, well, they were this, you know, well, they were out.
But it wasn't, this guy, it wasn't fluky. You know, it wasn't fluky. This will be our fantasy corner. I didn't take a screenshot like I should have, but here's the, let's see. there we go. We mollywopped out of your Falcon Mind podcast. 175 to 138. And if I ain't mistaken, by pure coincidence, I actually think that we got Locked On Falcons next week, which as of right now, we're projected to win at 52%. And this is the closest I'll get to running my mouth before I win. But, so far, I am the pound for pound is one for one in this Atlanta Falcons creator. Fantasy.
Well, I'm 2-0. I'm 2-0 in my fantasy right
there
now.
There it is. There it is.
Nice. You got any fantasy teams, Aaron?
Yeah, I got three. I figured out that three is like the max I can handle comfortably, and you know,
keep up with season. Yeah.
So anytime I try to get more than that, I'm just like, I don't know what I'm doing. One team is terrible.
I say my max caring. Is two, and that's about as much as I can pay attention to. Fred Butts,
Fred Butts.
I was gonna say this is the man that's handling our fantasy. For
yeah. So if we start going south, it's my fault. But anyway, so Fred Butts, he tipped us $2, which we appreciate. I think he started us off with our anyway. Aaron, he would like your thoughts on Desmond Ridder. What are your opinions on Desmond Ridder?
Yeah, I was a fan of Ridder after his first four starts last year. I thought he showed all the signs of being a good NFL starting quarterback that you can win games with, right?
Right.
You know, I think a lot of the debate this offseason was, does he have the potential to be a great quarterback that can win a Super Bowl? And my thoughts were like, let's just make the playoffs first. I'll worry about his ability to win a Super Bowl when we're playing actual in January, and then we'll figure that out.
Yeah.
And so I liked what I saw. I saw all the pieces I wanted to see. It was just more reps, and let's see all those pieces kind of come together. I guess for me, the thing that gives me pause the first two games is it does feel like the decision-making, going back to some of the things you guys just talked about with the dropped interceptions, has not been as good to start the season this year as it was at the end of last year. It wasn't like he was perfect last year. You know, that first start he had against the Saints, there was a couple of picks that probably should have happened, but that didn't happen. But after that, it wasn't really an issue. He wasn't making any glaring mistakes that you would be like, what is he doing out there? And we've had a couple of those so far this year, and that doesn't help. You know, like I'm not going to panic over it at this point in time because he's still a young quarterback, but it is one of those things where it's like, I thought we crossed that hurdle, right?
Right, like we ain't making those
I'll say of the two yesterday, the Jair Alexander one, I don't know if that was a miscommunication with Drake and Drake was supposed to snap off that route earlier, or if it was supposed to be a slant or something. But that one was the most glaring one. The Quay Walker one, yeah, he probably should have seen him, but we've seen seasoned veteran quarterbacks who've been in the league for years, won plenty of games, that just don't see a lurking linebacker. Like, for whatever reason, it happens. I mean, it's happened to Brady. It's happened to Mahomes. It happens to everybody. So I'm not necessarily going to ding him so much for that one. The Jair Alexander one was the one that I'm literally like scratching my head, like trying to think, what did you see? Because it looked like a predetermined pass. It looked like I'm dropping back, my back foot hits, I'm turning, throwing, that my guy's going to be there. And
that's unfortunately at this stage of his career, you know, King's over here saying Ridder is a one take, you know, QB. He looks them down on each play. And I don't necessarily agree with that. You know, we have seen him make reads and make progressions. It could very well be like the part that us as fans, and us going to sound like a cop out, but the parts of us as fans, we don't hear what's going on in that headset. We don't hear the information that the coach is relaying. I mean, it literally could be throw it to this guy. This is what I want you to do. And it's easy for us as fans to say, well, he should be reading the whole field and doing all this other jazz. But if that's how he's being coached to play, then, you know, put it on the coaches or what have you. But again, I still, you know, and I will caution anybody and everybody to remember that this, you know, it's a sixth start. You know, you don't necessarily see people bailing on, you know, any of the first round guys this year, you know, Bryce Young, CJ, or Anthony Richardson, and, you know, at this junction.
Anthony Richardson trying to bail on himself.
Well, I mean,
he's wanting to get himself killed.
That's the issue that you have with, you know, a certain style of quarterback, the ones that, you know, run first mentality. So that's something that you got to live with, you know.
Finish my thoughts on Ridder. I think while the decision making has been a little questionable, I do like the fact that his deep passing has been better this year. So it's like, okay, if we can just get the decision making back to being what it was, then I feel like he's clearly making progress. It just feels like a little bit like a half a step back and one step forward. I would just disagree with Jonathan on the, to me, the Jair Alexander interception to me was a little bit more forgivable than the Quay Walker one, or almost interception, I should say, just because like I felt like, well, he hasn't played a corner like Jair Alexander, and he thought he could test him, and he can't test Jair Alexander. And the Quay Walker one was a little bit more problematic for me, just because like I feel like most of the questionable decisions that have been near interceptions this year have been instances where he has either thought he could fit a tight window throw over the middle with a lurking linebacker. And like, that feels like if that's been to me, the consistent through line through these first two games. And like, that's why like the one with Quay Walker, like I get why he threw that, because he was thinking Walker was going to drift closer to the middle of the field and he'd just be able to throw it right behind him to Kyle Pitts, who was running an in breaker. But like, there was a couple of plays with Frankie Louvu last week where he thought, you know, he could fit this between Louvu or behind Louvu. And it just, so for me, that's, I have a little bit more of an issue with the Quay Walker one than the Jair Alexander one, because it does feel like the Jair Alexander one is a one-off. It's like, okay, well, don't try that ever again against Jair.
Don't do that.
As opposed to maybe this is a consistent issue with the linebacker thing where he's having difficulty reading the leverage of those linebackers in the middle of the field.
Go Dogs. That's all I got.
Go. Sit you over there. I'm gonna get a clipboard or soundboard.
What it is. He got hunted by the Dogs, man. That's all. Devontae Wyatt, you know, he thought he was still playing in Cincinnati and the Dogs game, you know, and he got dogged by two Dogs. I mean, that's what it is.
It's just Go Dogs.
I mean, he still ended up with the W at the end of the day.
So. Yeah, he did. He did. You know, he did.
All right, so we're on to Detroit as we you know, steadily plot along, and like, could this be like a Jeff Okuda sighting? You know, could this be? It sounds like we might be progressing towards him playing. It would be a story, you know, type, you know, soundbite, you know, type deal to have him come back against the team that gave up on him. Seems like a thing, you know, coaches would do. But news coming out of Detroit is they have put CJ Gardner-Johnson and Houston. What is his the James pastor, Houston. James Houston. Thank you. Both those guys on IR. So they're going to be down some defensive help, but you still got Aiden Hutchinson that you're going to have to deal with. And he's already proved to be a menace this year. And we've already seen that McGarry has a tough time against quality pass rushers. So, I'm not looking forward to that aspect of it. I hope that they move the pocket quite a bit, change the launch points, that kind of stuff. But, Aaron, what's your take on the going to Detroit? Do you think we finally see Okuda play?
It's a coin flip for me right now. It's hard to read anything into what Arthur Smith says about injuries because he never says anything about injuries. Nope. But part of me just wonders the fact that we didn't see Okuda. If we get to Wednesday and he's fully participating in practice on Wednesday, I'll feel a lot better about him playing. Mm-hmm. But if it's another limited day, I'll be skeptical just because he's been very conservative with, like, Hughes practiced the full week in week one going into the Panthers game, and then sat. And then right. We've seen Patterson come back fully healthy last week and still didn't play against Green Bay. So it does feel like we might need to see two full weeks of practice for Okuda before he plays. So that's why I'm not particularly optimistic. But then again, Arthur Smith can do whatever he's going to do, and we'll see. So, I think we definitely need Okuda sooner versus later just because of the Trey Flowers experience is not going as well as we would hope. And I don't think it's going to get any better against the Detroit Lions. So, maybe they give Mike Hughes a run, but I don't know if Mike Hughes is going to be better than Trey Flowers, but I feel pretty confident he can't be worse than Trey Flowers based on what we saw this past Sunday. So we'll see.
Especially if they decide to play him outside where he, graded out better, which I always thought was interesting when we signed him, that they immediately said, like, he's a nickel guy or he's going to be our nickel guy. And I was like, looking at all the data, without obviously pouring into every one of his games, I was like, yes, but he played better on the outside. Like, why would you? But I was like, hey, y'all know more about football than I do. We'll just see how it goes, and I'll lambaste you if it doesn't work. Seems to be the way about it. Bradley Burnett shot us a couple bucks, which we appreciate greatly.
Appreciate it.
He was showing up a little late, which is okay. Better late than never. But he said Mac Hollins really stepped up big. He's been fun to watch. He has been fun to watch. Another guy who stepped up big, we didn't touch on earlier, but the Janu Smith.
Yes.
Like
experience.
Yeah. I was trying to think like agenda. Took a step forward on Sunday. He had four really good crucial catches, which is like that seems if we can get Pitts going, that seems like a good role for Janu. But anyway, we'll get back into that in a second. Back to Detroit. Toby, what is the one thing that worries you about this Detroit matchup?
So when we did my top five running back tandems last week, Detroit Lions were just on the outside at number six, Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. I think that is my worry right now.
Montgomery hurt right now as well?
Well, if he is, then that'll be the only reason they'll be saved by the bell. But if he's not and he's running on Sunday, then that is a concern. That's my biggest concern. St. Brown, of course, I don't know who is going to get on him because he's a guy that it has been hard to stop, man. I mean, he's doing his thing over there in Detroit. But, yeah, the running backs is my main thing because we seem to still struggle trying to stop the run the way that I was like for us to be able to stop it with the type of guys we have up front.
Mm-hmm.
We did a better job this past week, but I mean we weren't facing Aaron Jones either.
Exactly.
Who was tackling himself half the time, it seemed like.
And Dillard still gave us fits carrying guys.
but that's what Dillon does. That is what Dillon does. Let's see. What Aaron, what worries you about Detroit?
I haven't watched the film yet of their Seattle game, but I heard that Seattle was able to carve them up with like 12 and 13 personnel, which is the 2 and 3 tight end sets. And I'm like, I know someone who likes to use that in their offense. Well, yeah. So I'll be, when I check out the game, probably tomorrow morning, I'll be looking for that to see if that's true. So if that is true, then I do feel a lot better about what this offense can do and potentially being able to keep pace with the Lions. I you know, for me, against Green Bay, the intriguing matchup was how do we slow down their offense? And I think, again, that's going to be the thing with the Lions, just because their offense is, as you said, JR, they're so similar to the Falcons in terms of team. Like they have a good offensive line. They love play action. You know, you talk about the defense. They have a former Saints disciple as their D coordinator in Aaron Glenn. Yep. Who runs a similar scheme as what we're trying to do here in Atlanta. So,
and they also have, you know, John Kaminsky. And this could be a revenge game for Kaminsky, who has found himself in at a nice home up there in Detroit.
Yeah. So I'll be curious to see if we can slow down that offense. Because as Toby says, Amon-Ra St. Brown, I call him the sun god. It doesn't seem like anybody can really stop him.
Right.
So I think Toby's kind of on it where it's like he's going to get his, and you just got to stop everybody else. So you got to focus on preventing guys like Jahmyr Gibbs and Marvin Jones and whoever else, you know, from getting theirs. Sam LaPorta, the rookie tight end that they got.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be the focus. It's just like, well, Amon-Ra's going to get 8 catches for 100 yards or whatever he's going to do. Right. And then you just, everybody else, you got to shut down everybody else. So we'll see how that goes.
When I talk about the similarities between the two, like offensively, my only real concern is that Detroit has like a 3-year head start in a sense. You know, they've been, you know, together now for, you know, they've been together now for, what, you know, 3 years with Dan Campbell, Ben Jones, and Jared Goff. I don't know if has Goff been there 3 years?
This is, I think, year 3 for him.
Yeah. So, you know, that's my only concern there is, like, in a sense, you know, our offense is still, like, trying to fully gel, which I think by the end of the year, it's going to be a much different and better looking offense than it is currently. But yeah, I was like, are we going to be able to, you know, slow them down enough to stay in the game? Which is, I mean, obviously the crux of playing Detroit. Sorry.
I also think, at least so far, the Seattle defense has not looked like anything special.
Mm-hmm.
Like week 1, I don't remember the score, but they didn't seem to want to stop anybody too much in week 1. Same thing in week 2. So like their defense hasn't shown anything. You know, they went up against Kansas City, but they went up against without Chris Jones. We'll see.
Right.
So far, it seems like Gibbs hasn't quite had the same impact, or they're not using him in the same way that, like, that we're using Bijan.
Yeah, but they may be forced to now with David Montgomery being injured. Now, I agree here with Anonymous, because I'm not reading your name. Anyway, linebackers need to show up in this one. I'll be interested to see if Troy Anderson is back this week, or if they're going to be depending on Nate Landman, who played well in his start for Troy Anderson. But like, I think it was Nate Tice who put up the heat map for Jared Goff, and you are going to have to defend the seams. And yeah, you know, so that means, you know, Caden Ellis and, you know, Troy Anderson or Nate Landman, and then, you know, Richie Grant and Jesse Bates, those guys who patrol the middle of the field, are going to really be tasked with a job to keep the middle of that field, you know, shut down. So
yeah, yeah, it's going to be, you know, I think with the injuries, especially to the defense, surprisingly, they've only got one sack through the first two games.
Wow. You know,
yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. I guess I'm just seeing, you know, granted, like I'm just seeing in my mind, Aiden Hutchinson, like putting the Kansas City guy on spin cycle. And I just figured he was wrecking shop.
That's so. Mahomes for you, man. You can't sack him.
Well, yeah, true. This is true.
So they finally got to Geno, but it took him literally running backwards for like almost 30 yards. And they, like, he just would not get rid of the ball, just would not throw it out of bounds. He just kept running. And it was super crazy. But yeah, they just haven't gotten to the quarterback. Like, now I don't know what their pressure rates look like, you know, whatever.
Oh yeah.
But as far as like actually getting to the quarterback and stopping the play like that, they've only been able to do that one time so far this year. And, you know, Aiden Hutchinson, he's definitely the premier guy over there. James Houston was like kind of the counterbalance. So you couldn't just put everybody on Aiden and what have you. Now, if he's not going to be in, so I don't know who their backup guy is. But I would imagine at that point, then you game plan to like, okay, we're not going to let that dude beat us. We're going to find out where he's at, and everybody else is going to have to take care of their guys. And we feel good with them doing that. This guy is going to wreck our house if we let him. And we're not going to do that.
So
I think that helps out a bunch.
As I have been watching chat most of the night tonight, we haven't put a lot up because A, we have a guest on, and B, there's a good bit to talk about with the games, but y'all been having a lot of fun in chat. Y'all been going back and forth at each other, which y'all gotta calm down, man. We all on the same team, and we all rooting. If y'all are here watching us talk, then we all want the Falcons to win anyway. So but it is now time for the part of the show where we do open it up to y'all's questions, y'all's comments. So if y'all want to go ahead and start throwing those in there, like direct those this way versus y'all directing them at each other. let's see, I'm going to scroll back up and see if I can't find one. Dirty Bird says, first time I've ever seen Aaron Freeman and Toby D together. Well, now you know that they're not the same people because they're, I don't know if that was ever anybody's like worry that maybe Toby D was Aaron Freeman or vice versa, but now y'all have seen them both on the same screen. He says, been a fan of both for a long time. We do want to take a moment to thank you, Aaron, obviously, for stopping in and chatting with us tonight. It's something we're trying to do a little bit more of this year, get some more people on. So we appreciate you stopping by.
Give him somebody's other mug to look at besides my ugly one.
Yeah. Well, I said, we'll turn your camera off. I think I could probably. No, hold on to the team. All right, let's see. There it is. There it is. I'm opening up the floor and ain't nobody actually asking a question. What is this nonsense?
Man,
normally y'all are,
I guess, well,
you let this down, chat.
The four of us.
Yeah, we're, well, I guess so. Well, that, and then, you know, maybe they're too busy yelling at each other today, which is interesting. Here we go.
Oh man.
Willie Doc says, should I be worried for the lack of touches Pitts is getting? Aaron, you want to grab that one?
I mean, you should be worried for your fantasy team just because you don't know if he's going to get touches each and every
that
week.
That part.
But, you know, I don't think as far as the functioning of the Falcons offense, you should worry too much about it. Like, I think, it, you know, there's going to be like, just because, you know, I think Ritter threw the ball like 38 times or something this past Sunday.
37?
Something like that, right? I don't think that's going to be the norm every week, right? So, right. Like, I think the issue you're going to have here in Atlanta, and this is going to be a continued issue every week, which is like Drake London gets a bunch of touches or Kyle Pitts gets a bunch of touches, and there just isn't enough volume in the offense for both of those guys to kind of eat consistently. So, you know, I don't think you should be worried about Kyle Pitts. He'll get his. It just may not be every single week because you got Drake London, and then there's going to be weeks where it's going to be Mac Hollins or Jonnu Smith, you know? Yeah. So Pitts is fine. It's just, you know, I got him on one of my fantasy teams, and I was happy to get him like in round six or seven or something. Like, oh, this is a steal for me. And so far it hasn't paid off in a major way, because, you know, he got a couple of plays called back last week, and
right,
you know, so we'll see. But like, I think from a fantasy standpoint, yeah, it's going to be a tough year for Kyle Pitts. But I think as far as impacting on reality football, as we tend to focus on, I don't think you have to worry too much about it.
There you go. MJ says, could we trade for a pass rusher? And if so, who would it be? I have been jokingly floating out of the past because of the volume the past two games. You know, should we, on every stream that I have gone on, should we trade Pitts for a pass rusher just to try to get chats all riled up? Nobody has taken the bait for me yet. But Toby, is there a guy like pass rush wise? Do you see the team like striking out, or do you think that they just stick with what they got and manufacture it the best way they can?
Ooh, that's a tough one, man. That's a tough one. I can't think of anybody right now, but I do believe that the Falcons could do something if their record continues to get wins. They may feel like they got another piece that can help them get to the playoffs. I'll say that much. I don't know who that person would be exactly just yet, but I do feel like that could be a possibility if they continue to get wins and they think there's another piece that, on from a pass rush standpoint, that can help them really cement their place in the playoffs.
I'm gonna take this one from Millie Mills, since he directed it to
Millie
me.
Mills.
Our buddy Millie Mills says, some people don't understand how CP gonna fit in the offense. Can you explain how he will? When he does come back, I think it's hilarious that they have labeled him the Joker on the depth chart. I think that's great, because what you're seeing right now with Bijan lining up everywhere, you know, you're going to see that from CP. Like, there's no reason not to, you know, for everywhere from slot in the backfield to tight end to out wide, you know, whatever matchup that they think they can get. I just think he's not going to have as much volume as he has had in, you know, recent years. But I think when he's out there on the field, he's going to be lined up wherever they think the best matchup is going to be. Jonathan, is that something you agree with?
Yeah, I think, you know, he might actually take the place of Algier in some of these Algier and Bijan sets. So then you got, like, whether it's Bijan in the backfield or CP in the backfield, you know, I think that just opens up some, you know, a lot of potential weapons in the passing game. You know, and then, you know, you can run CP from time to time. Probably, I would guess, no more than probably five, maybe six carries.
I think it's going to be a lot of, he's going to be sniping a lot of touchdowns, in my opinion. He tends to have just a nose for the ball. Here's another one for you, Aaron. When will we see Scotty Miller?
Yeah, man. He got one target.
Yeah.
On against Green Bay.
Wait, because they got a flag on that one, right?
Yeah, they tried to throw a fade to him. I think it was Rasul Douglas got flagged for holding or something. Basically was able to put his hands on Scotty Miller, and that pretty much prevented him from getting down the field. So that's the knock on Scotty Miller. He's not the biggest guy in the world. So big physical corner like Rasul Douglas can give him problems. I'm hoping we get to see something. You know, I really do think the Falcons need to have more speed on the field. I'm hoping CP can bring a little bit more juice to the offense. Like, you know, I think, you know, obviously Hollins and Jonnu Smith had solid games last week, so I'm not really complaining about it, but like, it just seems so methodical with those guys and Michael Pruitt getting all these snaps. And it's just like, can we try to spread the field a little bit, get a little bit more juice on the field? And so I'm hoping that they can find ways, even if it's not throwing the ball, Scotty Miller, like, you know, maybe do some misdirection stuff, some jet sweep type of stuff, some end around reverse stuff, just to try to get defenses, you know, out of sorts with a little bit more juice on the field. So hopefully we'll get a little bit more of Scotty Miller, but right now he seems to be firmly on the Bryan Edwards path of just basically being the forgotten man in the offense.
I would like to see him do some of the stuff we see with some teams where they give the guy the running start, right? Like on the motion, They don't wait for, you know, you snap it, not waiting for him to get to a spot. It's you let him get going full tilt and then you snap the ball. So he's got a running start, gives him more of a chance to get free off the line. Makes it harder for guys to get their hands on him. And I think that would be a good way to utilize his speed. Same thing with Cordero. Like, you know, you get him going, get him a good, like a rolling start, so to speak. And then see if guys can catch him, you know, what it boils down to.
Toby, we'll go with this one for you. Do you think Detroit has enough to slow down our run game?
That's a no. I don't think too many teams can slow it down. I mean, you saw that last year. You didn't have a lot of teams. Now, we couldn't throw worth crap, but we could pretty much run on anybody last year. And I think that continues still this year, even in the first two games. So, no, I don't see that happening.
All right, we'll follow up. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Jumping the gun.
I meant to hit the star.
Unacceptable. All right. Fred Butt says,
do y'all think we need a new head coach? Arthur Smith play calling is too run heavy. it's so ridiculous. I just had to put it out there.
There you go. Aaron, what do you think?
I spent about the first 10 minutes of today's Locked On Falcons complaining about Arthur Smith's offense. So,
oh, good. Well, there you go.
My gripes on that. Just mostly the passing stuff. I think the run stuff is great. I just, going back to kind of what we talked about with Scotty, like I just want to see more speed on the field and kind of spread teams out a little bit. I think that will help jumpstart the passing game a little bit easier and get them into a rhythm rather than it just feels like they're just condensing everything with the tight splits and with the focus on the run game and defense. It's like, okay, we'll just put as many bodies in the middle of the field and stack the box. And it's hard to generate those windows to throw into off of that. But again, I'll give it some time. See what happens with CP and see how these things evolve and see if, you know, they can just kind of do it naturally without having to make wholesale changes. But it does make me question a little bit sort of what is the ceiling of this offense if these issues continue to keep up.
It makes me like what makes me curious when we talk about Smith and play calling and whether you like it or you don't like it. It's like I always go back to when you say like earlier in the show, you were talking about, oh, you weren't worried about the defense because of like the money they spent in a sense, you feel like it's not proven, but more trusted. It's like, I go back and look at the, 2020 season of the Titans where you had two receivers at one over 1,000 yards, one at almost 1,000 yards at 936 and Corey Davis. And then you had, Derrick Henry at 2,000 yards, over 2,000 yards rushing. It's like he knows how to call an offense. It's like I get where people are complaining, and I even do so myself at times, but I'm just like, I don't know what the difference there was and why maybe we're just not getting there yet. I still feel like that's what we're eventually pushing towards the team-wise. So, you had Kyle Pitts with over 1,000 yards as a rookie. So it's not like he doesn't know how to get the ball into wide receiver or pass catching players' hands. It's just maybe he's gotten too good of a run game and like, nope, that's what I can count on. So I don't know. Just rambling thoughts there, I guess.
Dave Ragone.
Oh no.
He's been there since like day one of Arthur Smith, though, right?
Well, no, he came over from Chicago, but he's been day one since got here.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so, since day one he got here, Dave Ragone's been there. So, the first year when Pitts is going up for over 1,000 yards, he was there.
But you had that guy throwing the ball.
Yeah. I'm just saying. Yeah, but also we didn't have a running game then either. So.
What were you gonna say, Aaron?
I was just gonna say it's not my criticism of Arthur Smith isn't because I don't think he's capable of calling good offense. Like as you said, right. JR, we've seen it, right? We've seen glimpses of it here in Atlanta, right? We've seen all the pieces that we want to see in order for this offense to cook. It's just why can't we get it consistently?
Yeah,
week in and week out, game in and game out. You know, drive in and drive out. It just feels like it's always stopping and starting. It's just like an old busted car. It's just jerking, you know, down the road.
Jerky, jerky.
Yeah. And then like, oh, it's going now. And then it seizes up on you. And it's just like, that's where I'm starting to have more questions. But again,
right,
we're still early in the season. I don't
yeah, wanna, no doubt. Like,
or anything, but it's just like.
MJ says, I love Arthur Smith, but with the team, would him and the team benefit from hiring a pass game coordinator and maybe take off, you know, take the load off? Well, you would hope that that's what Ragone would do, you know, but like now Ragone is the, you know, QB coach / OC. So if that lets you know how much work maybe he's not doing in game planning, I don't know. You know, I think about the quote that Charles London and Dave Ragone had when they first got here in year one, that they are the ones setting the table for Arthur Smith to then, you know, take to the game and call the plays. So, you know, maybe it is a deal where they need to get somebody who's somebody different setting the table. Let's see. Charles, we've got a few more and then we're going to start wrapping this thing up. Charles Snatch says, if this year is successful, what position or positionless player could you see them make the team better? So I guess that would be, if we are successful, we've had this kind of sort of question, like, so who would you go for next, whether it's free agency or draft? Aaron, what position would you go for next to add to the team?
Well, I know Toby might not enjoy hearing this, but there was this guy that used to play for South Carolina, now plays for Florida State, named Jaheim Bell, that's kind of a Jonnu Smith type player. He played a lot of running back at South Carolina, now plays a lot of more tight end. That feels like an Arthur Smith guy all the way, just like do all the positionless stuff that he wants to do. So he's been a player I've been keeping my eye on this last year or so as one of these sort of positional types that can play some fullback, some tight end, some running back, some receiver, all that, and checks all those boxes. So you know, if you find yourself watching Florida State on Saturdays, you know, give Jaheim Bell a look.
There you go. Nick says, what will be our record before the bye? Toby, what do you think?
Ooh, man, when is the bye again?
Week 8, I believe.
11, I think.
No, 11. Is it 11?
Oh, yeah. Man.
I got the schedule here, but it doesn't say on this particular graphic when the actual bye is. So let's just say it's week 11. So
I'm going to say 6-4.
6-4. So winning record by the bye. Anybody disagree with that? Like Wild Aaron, you think they'll be come back to reality by then?
Well, I had them going 6-4 and starting the season 1-1. So they're off the 2-0. So let's go with 7-3.
Hey, there it is. 7-3. Cool, cool, cool. Let's see. Hide that current comment. Jonathan, did you have a prediction? I'm never good at the like record predictions, as we're going to see on our weekend segment when I put up the picks and how bad I did. So,
so looking at the, I think that we can be, say, 1-2.
You're gonna be faster than that, bro. Throw a number out there.
I think we can be 7-3.
7-3. All right, cool. I'm going to split the difference and say I'll go on Toby's side and say 6-4. So there we go. All right. Millie says, do y'all agree with putting Calais in the middle at times and let those young boys work on the edges? True. Like, I mean, that's what you do with Calais. You know, you move him from the, you know, edge on particular looks and put him inside with Grady. I would hope that they would continue to do that.
I think you know, a line with like Grady and Calais in the middle with like Ebiketti and Malone or Carter on the edges, it probably is like your best pass rushing look.
Malone has been interesting, like
in that he's not played.
Yeah. That's kind of what I was implying. Like, thoughts on Malone, Aaron?
Another topic I came up on Locked On Falcons.
Hey, have folks, when y'all get done here, please make sure if you want more in-depth thoughts.
Clearly, the fan base has their minds on some very specific subjects.
Apparently.
Are coming up time and time again at this point in the year. So, you know, it goes back to something I said going into training camp. I didn't really see a path for him getting a lot of playing time this year, just because, like, at least as far as Ryan Nielsen's defense is concerned, his role is the same role as Arnold Epiketti's role. And I think it's just going to be hard with more 4-3 looks and wanting more size up front to hold the edge and set the edge and play with lighter boxes. You know, going out there and putting a 240-pound guy on the edge is probably not going to be as something that Ryan Nielsen wants to do as much when he has a Calais Campbell and a Zach Harrison and Bud Dupree, who's like 270. And, you know, even though Lorenzo Carter's not the biggest guy in the world, you know, he's certainly a very physical player, right, for a player his size. And so, you know, I think with Malone, it's going to be a hard time for him to get on the field on defense. Hopefully he'll get a little bit more run as the season wears on. And of course, you always have to worry about injuries and attrition and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But the thing I said on Locked On Falcons long term, because someone asked me, like, if he doesn't get on the field this year, would you consider him a bust? And I would say no, just because I think a lot of it is out of his control, that the scheme change and the D coordinator change, mm-hmm, and what Dean Pease was looking for from edge rushers is different from what Ryan Nielsen is looking for. And that's hurt Malone more. It's not that he can't play. And so I think as time wears on, you know, he may look at a guy like Caden Ellis and borrow a page from him, who Caden Ellis was a similar sort of undersized edge rusher coming out of college with the Saints several years ago, but mm-hmm, became more of a linebacker. And that was his path to getting on the field versus, you know, trying to be this big physical edge in a Ryan Nielsen D line. So I think that's something that maybe Malone has to work on. Obviously, I don't think that's something that you can expect to happen, you know, by week six or anything like that. That right, may be something that we might have to wait the better part of two or more years before we can see that development. That's what happened with Caden Ellis. He really didn't get going till his fourth year. That may be something that we have to just wait and see on D'Angelo Malone. So time will tell on that. But right now, in the immediate short term, I don't see too many opportunities for him unless, you know, Arnold Epiketti goes down with an injury.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Willie Doc, we appreciate you on the $2 ring. He says, I like the new Saturday segment. It's fun. That's what we're trying to do. Just have a little bit of fun. Take a broader look at around, you know, the look around the entire league at some of the bigger storylines that go on, because there's so much out there that, you know, by the end of the season could, you know, affect the Falcons. And, you know, we have thoughts and opinions on more than just the Falcons. So if y'all enjoyed that, that's what our Saturday show.
I don't think my picks turned out too well.
No, I know mine didn't. I didn't even look at them. I know they didn't. But anyway, but yeah, we'll keep a tally on that. All right. So one more as we start to fully wrap this thing up. Since I got to say, it's only two games, but it's nice to see a list of only 9 undefeated teams and be one of them. Fortunate that the two others that will be in our division, though. Yeah, who saw that, right? That's something that we'll probably get into on Saturday. But we drew it just like we drew it up, right? Everybody right in the NFC South, except for the Panthers, being 2-0, just like we predicted.
Yeah.
So, all right, folks. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. Before we get out of here, Aaron, won't you let everybody know where they can find you and how they can bother you during the week?
Absolutely. Go immediately to Locked On Falcons so you can hear only my opinion on these very same topics, and you don't have to worry about anything Toby and JR and Jonathan.
That's right. Now, get over there, Aaron.
My opinion.
That's right. Do it.
All these same things.
You don't have to hear us interrupting Aaron all the time or anything.
So you can, of course, check me out. I love it. On YouTube, wherever platforms you are. Of course, if you enjoy me on the Twix, as they say, check out Falc Fans.
Before we all have to pay for it. So, all right. As always, y'all can follow me on Twitter. I am at Grim1128, GRIMM1128. Toby.
TobyD1991.
Jonathan.
At Jonathan M. Holder. Come by, say hi.
There you go. Keep your eye out. We'll have a show on Saturday where we look around the league, and then we'll be back on Tuesday, hopefully talking about 3-0 Falcons. And as always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up. Hey, y'all, my phone is about to die, so I'm about to go blank.